Cost of Loss by Kenneth E. Hartman. I didn't just lose my freedom when I killed Thomas Allen Fellows and took his life. I lost my life, too. How does one mourn the loss of their own life? In a time so long ago, I don't really much remember. Drunken, high, filled with the irrational rage of troubled youth, I killed a man over misspoken words. There's nothing to be gained in rehashing the story save to acknowledge both my guilt and my lack of any specific intent beyond that of the dumb anger of a young man. Those crime-prone years between 16 and 24, when the brain remains unformed, unfinished, when the army wants you because you haven't yet developed the ability to resist emotional impulses, it was in those years that I threw away my life. Decades later, still a prisoner of the state, still a prisoner of that young man's anger, I began to notice an incipient scream, a primal cry always lurking at the edges of my consciousness. At first, I concluded I was just becoming sentimental, as many a maturing man tends toward. But as the years went on and the sensations intensified, I came to understand. Like every other human, I longed to be part of the tribe. I longed to return from the wars I volunteered for all those years ago, before I could think well, before I could name my bruises. Back to when I did not know myself well enough to know much more than how much pain I was in, how much I hurt. Many commercials on television play to the same heartstrings, the need to feel loved and included, the need to be cared for. In the penultimate scenes, right before the announcer's voice tells you how to purchase the product that will meet the need stoked, as the grateful children embrace grandma, or the surprise return of the son early back from the good wars plays out, right then I feel a surge of emotion catch in my throat. Inside the loveless embrace of the state, particularly for those of us condemned to the long, slow death sentence of life without the possibility of parole, the need to feel is always and deliberately thwarted and unfulfilled. In one of my earliest memories of my father, where he towers over me with his military bearing and sharp-trimmed mustache, something has made me cry. I cannot remember the reason. I cannot remember where this tiny eddy in the stream of my life's journey takes place. I can, nonetheless, remember with snapshot clarity the exchange between us. He looked down at me from his impossible height and rumbled out a harsh rebuke framed as a question with only one obvious answer. Are you a boy or a girl? He had weathered storms hard to even imagine, dead bodies, parents gone in an instant, and more, tragedies I knew nothing of until decades later. His stoicism was hard won, and he wasn't an odd outlier. The whole culture of white working class America forbid the display of emotion by men. It was drilled into us with a relentless ferocity until it became second nature. My friend Greg Johnson found the body of his father, felled by a shotgun blast through the mouth, the trigger pulled by the father's own hand on Thanksgiving Day. The man had several children and a wife. Days later, the funeral was held at St. Pancratius Catholic Church. During the service, not a sound of unrestrained grieving was heard, not a moan, not a gasp. The entire proceeding took place inside the icy grip of suppressed silence. When I walked out of the church, I felt like I'd just been through a 15-round boxing match. Years later, after a two-day trial I was only marginally a participant at, which determined the rest of my life, it was observed and commented on by the judge that I appeared to possess no remorse because I displayed no emotion during the trial. The deeper truth was, and still is at a deep, fundamental level, I had internalized the demands of my father and my culture too well. To cry was to be a girl, to be feminine, to be weak. In the world I came from, to be weak was a cardinal sin. We were taught by our fathers and our heroes, from the moment of our arrival on this plane, to become isolated statues of stone, impervious to whatever life threw at us, with never a plea for mercy. But so it is several lifetimes later that I find myself choking up at schmaltzy scenes in Pillsbury commercials, wiping away real tears at middling movie performances, or drifting off into a misty reverie after reading a sad essay in The New Yorker. It took a long while of contemplation to realize that all of this was more than mere sentimentality. The sharp edge of grief is gradually pushing through the man armor I've worn all these years, all the way back to that accusatory question hurled down from the far above. The bottomless grief that plagues me is for the loss of the life I could have lived, a loss so all-encompassing it includes within it a different universe, an alternative timeline, and it threatens to engulf and consume me, the kind of loss that is, ultimately, indescribable. This was recorded by Prison Radio.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.